Hello and welcome to the Authentic Aretha Tribe with me, Sadie Mills, coming live and direct today from a beautifully sunny day, sitting in the campo. So we're outside, you'll probably hear some birds and some rustling of trees, and I'm really excited for my next guest is a friend of mine that I've known for many years here in Aretha. He's going to tell us a little bit about how he came here, what his story is and what he's doing now, which is all very, very exciting. So I'm delighted to announce that we've got Howard Boyle. Hi, Howard, and thanks for being here.
Hi, Sadie. Thanks for having me on your lovely show. I'm honoured to be part of this show, this podcast. Fantastic.
Ever growing. My list is getting very, very big. So when you said you agreed to come on, I was like, yes, let's get him in right away.
An honour and a pleasure. And thanks for coming to do it in my lovely home, Casa Disgracelands, in the garden here.
Casa Disgracelands. Now, that you'll understand why he's called that the house that. And I'll put a little sign on my socials because I've taken a photograph of your house sign, which is brilliant. And it's perfectly fitting for you. So to start with, who are you, Howard? Tell everybody.
Well, I'm Howard Boyle, 45 years of age, originally from Brighton. I am known on the island as Helvis, H-E-L-V-I-S. The reason being is 25 years ago, it's the anniversary of me coming here this year, I was just turning 20, and for a couple of reasons that were nothing to do with criminality in any way, but I had to leave Brighton quite fast.
Oh, and we're not going to get to hear that story then.
No, don't worry, I wasn't running away from police or anything like that. It was kind of, I was a young guy and I was like, what am I doing here? And I decided to come to Spain. But at that point, I didn't know where to go. So packed my bag, just cashed in my tax rebate because I was working in construction at the time. So I was a young strapping lad with a bit of money in my back pocket. Got to Gatwick Airport, started wondering what I was going to do, where I was going to go. Should I get a one-way ticket? Where should I go in Spain? So I have a couple of pints in the airport bar.
As you do.
And then two big American guys, big burly American guys come in. And I'll always remember them. I forget their names, but I remember those guys. They were from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And they sat down next to me. We got talking. So we sat there. We had a couple of drinks. They told me they was going to Ibiza. They just met a group of lads in a bar in London who just come back from a stag holiday here. And I was like, well, Ibiza sounds good. Let's go. Boom. Jumped on the plane with them. We arrived at like 6, 7 a.m. Bag straight into the hotel. Looking for some action down in Playa del Bossa. And space was opening up around 8 a.m. And we walked straight into space. And the rest is history, so they say.
Amazing. So what year would that have been then? My maths isn't my strongest point.
Well, I mean, obviously, we've known each other for 25 years. We worked together at Menu Mission. So this was June 1998.
Wow. So actually a year before I first came here.
I was
99 first year.
Yeah. So 1998, 25 years ago.
So off the bat, literally, you were at the airport. I can picture you now, little Howard, with his suitcase, or hold all probably, not even a suitcase, just a few clothes chucked in the bag, looking up at the thing, and then these big burly Americans coming in. This is brilliant.
Yeah.
And they only knew from meeting another couple of guys. That's kind of how it works sometimes, isn't it?
Sliding door moment. I mean, I would have probably ended up, if it wasn't for these guys, I should dig out their numbers. I think I've got them somewhere in the attic of my brother's house. I could have ended up in probably somewhere like Marbella. Not that it would have suited me, but I would have just not really known about the Balearics. Yeah. I wasn't aware of the Balearics. I'd have ended up in Torremolinos or Marbella or somewhere like that, you know what I mean? And I'm sure I'd have had a great time, but my life probably wouldn't have been so profoundly changed if I didn't come here, you know what I mean?
This is why I, one, wanted to do this podcast, because, you know, people always say about Ibiza that, especially the workers, the people that end up, you know, with Ibiza in their heart and end up living here, that they're either running away from something or something draws them here. And for you, like you just said, it's a sliding doors moment. And it happens to so many of my guests, me even, you know, I didn't even want to come here. And when you do finally get the time to listen to my first episode, you'll know.
I'll do that
naughty,
this week.
Naughty, naughty. But yeah, you know, I didn't want to come here either. And something drew me. My friend said, you're bloody coming. And I ended up being here. And for me, it changed my life. So you arrived here, went out to space that first day, which is, I mean, for those that don't know and haven't been here, space isn't there anymore, and we're all very sad still about it.
Oh, our church is gone. Our church on Sunday is gone now.
Yeah. So you went there for the first time. Obviously, you had your mind blown. Had you ever been to a big super club like that anywhere else? I mean, Brighton's obviously you know, the mini Ibiza of the UK, I always say, because it's got a similar feel to it. So you probably felt quite at home.
Well, you know, I grew up in Brighton, as I mentioned, but I grew up on quite a rough council estate called Whitehawk, which is, kind of, people don't associate Brighton with rough council estates, but that's actually free. So anyway, I grew up in this rough council estate. So when we were growing up, it was, the 80s, 90s, early 90s. So we used to go raving and as like teenagers, and we used to go to a place called Stearns, which is just outside of Brighton. And we used to bunk into the Zap, which was big at the time. We used to go down there with my cousin and stuff. And in the early and mid 90s, there was loads of illegal raves in Brighton. That was an incredible era to grow up in Brighton. You used to go to the Shoreham Power Station. There used to be illegal raves there. And as teenagers, you know, we're talking about being 12, 13. We used to say to our parents, well, in my case, my grandparents, I say, oh, I'm staying at my friend Mark's house. And Mark used to say that he stayed at my house. And what it was we were just to go out partying all night, raving, and, God, you know,
I've
go
got
home
a 12-year-old.
In the morning.
Don't tell me this.
So I was already educated in raving, and I was always a bit of a, I was 50-50, a rave kid and an indie kid, you know, the old Stone Roses and, you know, that kind of era, Oasis in the early days. So I was already versed in it. So when we walked through the pearly gates of space, let's say, I was blown away because, of course, it's an amazing club. But I was already into raves. We had a great day that day with the guys. They went home to get some sleep and I was, you know, going full power.
Raring to go.
So I ended up carrying on and on and on and on. And then the next day, I was in this bar in Plaid and Bustle on the Monday. And I was speaking to this Dutch guy. And the guy behind the bar, I said, well, where's good to go tonight? He said, Manumission opening party. I was like, right, okay, this sounds interesting. He sold me a ticket.
Just got shivers then. Even you say a Manumission opening, I just was like, oh.
Yeah. And it was it was like the day before my 20th birthday, right? So I get to Manumission, I'm on my own. The American guys are just completely wiped out from the day before. And I walk in there and, you know, Magic, you know, your husband, Magic was one of the first people I bumped into.
Really?
There. Yeah, he was working, doing his thing. And then I bumped into Kevin Randall and Keith Smith, still my best friends to this day. They were working as the Gurning policemen. They used to walk around and dressed as like coppers. British coppers like Bobbies and put stickers on people saying you've been caught gurning in a non-gurning zone and stuff like that. So I was like, right, these are my kind of people. So then
all sorts of craziness. I can see Manumission in my head and all
the,
you know, people going around peeling potatoes just to really do people's heads in, feeding people spoonfuls of peanut butter just to really, really do people's heads in. You know, all that craziness. For anyone that hasn't ever been, didn't have the pleasure of going to Manumission, you are sadly... You come unstuck there because it was one of the best things of the whole 90s, I think.
It was incredible. It was a golden era to be alive. And it was, I always say two things. It was pre-internet. Well, internet was around in 96, blah, blah, blah. But we weren't really using it in the late 90s. Even in the early 2000s, only a few people were really using it. So it's pre-social media. And it was also pre 9/11, when the world kind of changed a little bit, you know, because of the Iraq war and all this kind of stuff. So not going on a negative, but it was a kind of riding a crest of a wave coming out of the 90s. And it was especially on the island as well. There was not much VIP. In fact, there was VIP, but the door was always open to everyone. And people mingled with everyone in the VIP. Not like it was champagne sparklers, some of the stuff that goes on now, but the world's changed in the last 25 years. However, that was a magical, magical time. So I met these guys, the guys I just mentioned, from Entertainers at Manumission, and they had a ritual where they used to walk back from Privilege every Tuesday morning when the after party used to be at Bar M, and it used to be called what was it called? I don't know. Anyway, there was a name for the after party. So people used to go there for a few hours and then go to space. Breakfast Club or something it was called. So anyway, these guys had been working there in 97, so they used to walk back every Tuesday morning.
Walk back from Privilege to Saint-Anne.
So we're talking
pre-disco bus days then.
I mean, there was disco bus, but it was just the ritual of what they did. It took us about 3 hours, I think, in the end, because we were in and out of farms and, you know,
causing mischief.
Stopped at a petrol station, you know, buying shots of vodka, all sorts of stuff. Anyway, we finally got to Bar M, and I don't know who it was one of the boys, one of the entertainers, went, right, come on, let's go and steal that boat. So we swam out in the harbour at the back of Bar M and started climbing up the ropes of this boat. And all dressed in his mad gear, you know, like fancy dress. And then this other guy come out from the other boat and he just looked at us and he was laughing. He was like, look, you're going to get arrested, so I'm just going to take you back to the beach. So he put us on his tender, took us back to the beach. Everyone's on the beach clapping, go, way. So then anyway.
That was rather nice of him, I'd say.
I think he just looked at us and thought, right, these guys are just completely off
harmless,
their heads.
Harmless
fun.
Yeah.
But let's take them back to shore before they get nicked by the Coast Guard, whatever. So then, anyway, everyone's clapping on the beach. Dorian, who used to be the head of the entertainers, as you well know, turned around to me and said, you should have a job with us.
That's not bad going for your first time to manumission.
Meet here on Thursday where we have the entertainers work meeting, or the following Monday. And, you know, we'll find something for you and crack on. Anyway, the very next day, my money started running out. So I got a job, and not many people know this, right? So my first job in Ibiza was, I used to sell waffles in the bar across the road from Bar M. So you remember the old ball bar?
Yeah.
And the ball machine?
Yeah.
Right opposite for Bar M. Anyway.
Been on that many a time.
Yeah.
After having too many beers.
So I got a job, and this was actually the day of my 20th birthday. I'll always remember. So I gave this job. Oh, terrible. That just as we're getting to the juicy point.
That was just his pet elephant having a wee.
That was it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I knew I should have put him back in the stable before you come. So anyway, basically, in my waffle training, okay.
Yeah.
So they say, right, if we don't sell waffles from the night before, we just put them in the grill a little bit longer and put extra sauce on them.
Okay,
don't worry, I've got this boxed off. I'm the waffle man. Anyway, so I'm staying there all night, getting slowly drunk, and I haven't sold one waffle. Then Dell, who used to be the manager, Big Dell from Bar M, crossing the road to me. He said, look, I've been watching you all night and I hate waffles, but I feel sorry for you. So I'm going to buy a waffle from you. I was like, cheers, Dell. What sauce do you want? Chocolate, strawberry, boom, boom, boom. Anyway, so I do the waffle for him. Some small chat. He pays me the money, walks off. As he's crossing the road, he takes a bite from the waffle and nearly breaks a tooth.
Oh, no.
I didn't have the grill plugged in.
Oh, no. So it's proper stale.
So I got fired, right, on my 20th birthday for being a waffle man with selling moody waffles. And I was known in a small circle of people, Dow and a few other people, Big Adam Hubbard, as the moody waffle man of San Antonio.
Well, that's a title you'd let go of very quickly.
Yeah, I don't stick that on my CV.
No.
So anyway, I thought I'd add that to the story because it was quite funny. And then it led me to the work meeting that Dorian, the head of the entertainers at Manumission, invited me to.
You've been here, what, a week, and you've already made an impression. You've already got a nickname and you've already pretty much been coveted into this little crew, which was quite inclusive, really, wasn't it, back in the day, to be in
But they were
in
the crew as well, you know, like the Manumission crew were the crew to be in with. And I think it's like, going back to this island, it's like a magnet. It draws you to the right people, you know. So I went to the work meeting with Dorian and he said, we've run out of costumes. Have a look in that chest. And there was this big chest. So I've opened this chest and there's just one outfit in the corner of the chest. And I pick it up and it's an Elvis Presley suit.
I've never heard this story.
Yeah, this is how I become Elvis. So I wasn't an Elvis fanatic beforehand, but this is how Elvis was born. So I pulled it out and I said, how much am I getting paid for this? And it was like, you know, it was ridiculous wages. It was like
£4 or something.
Yes. It was nothing. It was like 18 quid. It was 4 mil. Do you remember? It was 4 mil. Old money, pesetas. So it was bullshit money, but it was the fun of doing it. So that was how Elvis was born. Then I was walking around the club and thinking, how else am I going to make some more money? And then, you know, as the weeks progressed, they needed some builders, and I've done a bit of building, and I've done a bit of carpentry. So within about a month, I was, you know, like a part of the team building the shanty town on the roof of Manumission, the Manumission Motel. Of course, now become an iconic kind of building, which is no longer there. It's a roundabout now in Jesus, as you know. It was knocked down about 10, 15 years ago. But it's kind of like almost getting that kind of iconic status that the Studio 54 of Ibiza, you know? Iconic, mysterious places that are no longer exist.
Do you know that they're just about to launch a big hardback book called The Motel? Claire and Michael put it together.
Yes, exactly. And one of my stories is in it about how I met Howard Marks, which I'll tell you because we're on the subject. So Mike and Claire are still very good friends of mine, of course. As are Andy and Dawn. So when I was working there as a carpenter, quite a funny story, up on the roof, as builders, we used to just get, you know, stale baguettes with some cheese and ham in packets. You know how it works. And I went to the toilet one day on my break, and I noticed that there was this big platter of fruit and all this, and for the guests. And the guests of the Manumission Motel were mainly the strippers from New York, the DJs, and people like Howard Marks, God bless his soul, passed away a few years back. And anyway, so I went downstairs and there was Howard Marks. I didn't know who Howard Marks was at that time. So I'm just a dusty old builder nicking some of this fruit because I'm sick and tired of the stale baguettes upstairs. And he turned around to me and said, "Oh, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm one of the builders upstairs." He said, "I saw that the progress is coming along really well." And I said, "Yeah, yeah, what's your name?" He said, "My name's Howard." I said, "Well, my name's Howard too." So we got talking and he was saying where the name Howard originally come from. And then we started hanging out quite a bit. Because I was there a lot, and then in the evening I was drinking at the bars and stuff, and obviously seeing him at Manumission. Then I still didn't know who he was, but then people were coming up to him, literally with Rizzler packets, asking to write, sign, autograph the Rizzler packets. And someone come up to me, I think it was Sid Shanty, and said, "How come you know Howard so well?" And I said, "Oh, I just met him at the motel the other day." I said, "Well, why is everyone making this big fuss?" And he said, "Oh, that's Howard Marks," and blah blah blah. Then I said to Howard, "Now I know who you are, but I know you as Howard." And he said, "That's the best thing you could ever say to me." So we stayed in contact over the years. We had a couple of great parties in Brighton. Then the last time I ever saw him was about 10, 12 years ago at Bestival. And we had a great, great night with the Audio Bullies and loads of mad stuff went on. But anyway, I'm going off in a tangent now. But didn't you meet him as well?
I met him at Bora Bora once when I was sitting. Those big two palm trees in front of Bora Bora Beach Bar now, that are ginormous. They were like, I don't know, toddler height. They were just being planted. This is how long ago it was. It was in 99. I didn't even know who he was either. And we were just sitting there waffling away about God knows what. And somebody come up and shook his hand because it was the time that he'd written that book, Mr. Nice. Mm. So he was quite famous at that time. You know, everyone was reading about him because he was the big drug smuggler. And, you know, what a lovely man. I mean, yeah. I could have talked to him all day.
Super intelligent man.
Such a gentle soul. Yeah. Really, really nice person.
And that was the thing about the Manumission Motel. Again, going back to the island being a magnet. I mean, that was a kind of epicentre within an epicentre with all these kind of creative people and stuff. And now it's a roundabout. It was knocked down and, it's a mythical, iconic place. So that's going back to how Elvis was born. That's how it all happened, Manumission. So I've got so much to thank for... you know, Michael, Dorian. Claire, Andy and Dawn, Dorian, all of the team, Dell, who brought my first waffle, first and last waffle
that broke
me.
His tooth. So obviously you became Elvis here in 1998 then.
Yeah.
And then you were doing that for how many years? I mean, you went abroad with it and everything, didn't you?
Yeah, well, basically what happened was I started doing it, obviously, weekly at Manumission. I was the Manumission Elvis. That was what my gig was. And then... all of a sudden, other clubs started picking up on it, and I'd done Pasha for the DJ Awards. I had to pick up the award for Junkie XL. This guy called Tom, who created that track, Little Less Conversation, in 2002. Yep. So I'm going about 21 years ago now. So me and him performed that there, and then done Space 12th anniversary. So I'm going back a long time as well. So obviously, it closed down. Our church closed down in 2016. So I'm going back. Whenever that was, 2002, I think. And then that was with Eric Murillo. I performed with Sasha, Inside Space as well. Performed with Jamiroquai. I went on tour with Jamiroquai. I opened up their world tour in 2001 in Barcelona in front of 30,000 people. And over the years, me and Norman, Fatboy Slim, become very good friends. I mean, we met here in 98. It's a funny story, actually, going off on a little tangent. But
tangents.
How me and Norman become friends was, in 98, he played the back room. He used to love playing the back room. And, of course, he was playing the main room as well. But he said to me when we first met, he goes, "You look more like David Essex than you do
I can see
Elvis."
That. Love David Essex. I've always had a bit of a crush on David Essex. I don't know why.
Be careful, Magic. Your wife's chatting me up on my terrace, the Terrazza del Amor at Casa Disgracelands. So anyway, so basically, we had this banter all night. And I got the last word. And I can't remember what I said, but I got the last word. But that was the banter between us. I was more David Essex than Elvis and blah, blah. And then I run off going, "Yeah, I got the last word." And then about 3 hours later, walking out of Privilege in the morning, and this Range Rover come past, the window come down, and Norman put his head out and went, Essex! And drove off with his fist out the window like that. So he got the last word. And then ironically, we had a mutual friend in Brighton. And he said, oh, Norman wants to get hold of you. Brighton have been promoted to the Premiership, which was the first division at that time, I believe, going back to 2001, or 2000 even. And they're doing a big gig, him and Tim O'Mass, in the Dome, which is the most famous venue in Brighton, very prestigious venue. And it just had this big refurbishment, so it's looking all beautiful. It's like it's 200-300 years old, this venue. It's like an old theatre. So it was a big day for Brighton, for my city. Brighton had gone up into the Championship, and we had a big party, and I performed with him and Tim O'Mass. I've got a blurry photograph somewhere. And then we become really good friends, and then, you know, I went on tour with him. He called me up. I was in Brazil, that was it. I was in Brazil backpacking, actually. Went to the carnival with some friends in Salvador de Bahia. Ended up in Rio. And I saw that Rio, he was doing a big gig in Rio. In fact, he told me in December, and I'm fast forwarding to March now. And I happened to be there. I called him up, met him in the hotel bar. And he was a bit drunk, a bit tipsy, let's say. And he's like, I want you to come on stage with me tomorrow. And I was like, great. And he didn't let me a chance to say that I've actually got the Elvis suit in the bag.
I was going
to
ask that.
Yeah, I used to take it around the world because I used to have a website called disgracelands.net. And I used to get photographs of me in different parts of the world, you know, focal points. And in this instance, the big Christ statue in Rio de Janeiro.
Was it, just to quickly interject here, was it the same Elvis suit that you picked out of the trunk way back in, or have they given you a nice new
one? That one died.
It would have been filthy.
Yeah, that one died. Many of them died, actually, but I had three made. I had a white one, all Vegas style with the rhinestones, a sky blue one, and a red one. Anyway, so I think I had the blue one, the sky blue one, which was my favourite. That was in the bag, and Norman was obviously overwhelmed and super pleased that I'd had it in the bag because he was thinking about flying it over on DHL. He even said, I'll fly your grandmother over with it. Don't worry, it's in the bag. So anyway, so the next day, he said, meet me in the lobby at 1 p.m. It was an all-day kind of event, just like the Big Beach event in Brighton. But this was sponsored by Nokia, and there was rumours there was going to be quite a lot of people there. And anyway, so 1 p.m, we got picked up, and it was a police motorcade, like two motorbikes at the front, two at the back. And we got escorted through the city, like people, like, he's huge there, you know, and people like at the side of the road going, whee! We arrive at this, at the venue on the beach, in Flamenco Beach. So you've got Copacabana, Ipanema Beach, and Flamenco Beach, all in one line. Anyway, so we got there. The Brazilian DJ, the local DJ, DJ Marky, was playing. There was about 150,000 people there already at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And Norman said, are you nervous? I said, I'm really nervous. I said, look, it's like Brighton Beach, but it's only early. Anyway, we go backstage, few drinks, build up the Dutch courage. In the end, me and him are quite drunk. And all of a sudden, his manager's gone, Gary Blackburn, good friend of mine, said, right, split these two up. trouble incoming. And Norman's being dragged away from me. And they said, right, you're going to know when to go on, you're going to know when to go off. So I thought, I'll go for a little wander, go outside. And I've just been told that there's nearly 500,000 people there in attendance. They've just done a kind of like a clicker headcount thing. And it had cinema screens going all the way down the beach. So it's Brighton, Big Beach Brighton 2002 times two.
Wow.
Because that was a quarter of a million, so 500,000. So it was a huge thing. Anyway, so I go out into the Golden Circle, have a drink and blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, Norman's come on and everyone's, you know, like the main acts come on. And all of a sudden, these torches come flying through the crowd, this security. They went, there he is. Grabbed hold of me and they were like, right, you're on. I was like, I was very drunk at this point. Very drunk. To the point where they had to get me dressed into my Elvis suit. That drunk.
Oh, and then all of us,
and we had no plan, there was no strategy, no nothing. Norman just said, you're going to know when to go on, you're going to know when to go off. So all of a sudden, Norman's held up. This is on YouTube, by the way. I'll show it to you after. And he holds up a record sign saying, ladies and gentlemen, we now have Mr. Elvis Presley. And then they just go, boom, they push me on stage. And I've got these big, fat, juicy, dark Elvis glasses on. And I go walking off the almost off the end of the stage. So I literally go like that. And I'm like tiptoeing on the end of the stage. Managed to pull it back. He drops his remix of Crazy in Love by Beyonce, but an acid housey version. I think it was his remix. I should know that. But anyway, he was banging that out. And it was more of like a crowd revver. So I was just diving around, giving it the Elvis moves. And then it was like, went on for about 5 minutes, and then he dropped. He just nodded to me. I was dancing around. He nodded to me, and I thought, well, that's a cue for something. So I went down on one knee, and he dropped Right Here, Right Now, mixed with Born Slippy. And it just, boom, I come up with a cape, and there's a photograph of me and him, and he's behind me with the cape. And it was the most epic moment of my life. And that was the biggest moment of my life, biggest moment of E's career in terms of numbers as well. We still talk about it now. And it was also the last ever Elvis gig I ever did.
And did you get paid for it, or did you just go along for the crack?
Got paid, and had great fun. And you know, it was just incredible. And it was the last ever Elvis gig I ever did, because I was never going to beat that. No. And also, it started by fun, you know, an accident. Last costume in a chest, it could have been anything.
Yeah.
And it went all the way through with some of the biggest acts in the world. And then I was just like, right, boom, that's it.
And
I hung up
high.
The blue suede shoes.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
I feel quite honoured that I saw you many, many times and probably took you completely for granted, you know, like we did in those days.
Well, we took everything for granted because we were just living in that moment. And the reality is, I mean, ultimately, I wasn't the best Elvis impersonator in the world, but I was the dance music Elvis of that time.
And other people have tried to copy you. You know, other people have tried to... I can't even think now who it is, but I've seen people try to pull out the old Elvis impersonator and just die a complete death, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody
got
can
away
do it like
it.
You.
I mean,
exactly.
People ask me to bring it back, like Danny Gould asked me to bring it back for the 25th anniversary of Clockwork 5 years ago. And it was my 40th birthday. It was the 20th anniversary of me doing Elvis. And I thought, the time is right. It was at Benamusa Park. And you know what? I was working at the time, well, as I am, I've got my own company, IB for Unlock, which we'll go into more. But I very nearly put the suit on just for this one last time because it was a special occasion. My brother there, my best friends, and blah, blah, blah.
And Danny Gould can be very persuasive when he wants something.
Yeah. And it was just before Paul Oakenfold was coming on. It was a prestigious moment. And I was working with some clients who've become good friends of mine, and they were about to buy a villa via me. And I thought, do you know what? Do they really want to see me stage diving, dressed as Elvis, being this complete nutter from the late 90s? And then take me serious in terms of business the following week. And I thought, do you know what? I've moved on from it. The last time I'd done it, I left it on a massive high. And,
I think you made the right decision.
Yeah, I made the right decision. And every now and again, I think about it. I get asked quite a lot, especially this time of year, the summer coming up. And no, I've moved on. Elvis is dead. The king is dead. Long live the king.
Oh, that makes me sad, but happy and proud of you at the same time.
Thank you.
So moving on to Ibiza Unlocked then. Tell us about what that is.
Okay, so Ibiza Unlocked was actually born in my mind when I was still living in Dubai. So I left the island in 2003, from 1998 to 2003, that golden era. And then I left, ended up back in Brighton, where I'm from, lived in London for a bit, lived in Barcelona. And then when I was in Dubai, I ended up in Dubai selling real estate there. And, you know, I went down this different route. You know, when I killed Elvis off, I went back to college and got my carpentry certificate. You know, like I wanted to... Right, I'm sick and tired of being this dance music kind of clown, so to speak. So...
Good to have a skill under your belt as well, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And then when the crash of 2008 happened, construction's the first thing that goes down. So I thought, I've got to reinvent myself. So I ended up being a real estate agent. And I was in Dubai with the shirt and tie and living this corporate lifestyle because I'm one of those people that like to try a bit of everything, you know, and just see where I fit properly. And I'm sitting in Dubai and I'm making money. And then I was like, do you know what? I use this as kind of a metaphor. I'm looking across the water, across the sandy desert to Ibiza. And Ibiza is this feminine energy. You know, we all know it's a feminine energy. And she's kind of waving back to me saying, what are you doing in the desert? Come home to me. So that's what I did. I ended up coming back in 2015. But just before I left, about a year before I left, I think, right, if I'm going to come back to Ibiza, I need to have a plan. So Elvis is dead. The entertainer side of me in that regard is gone. I want to be taken seriously as a businessman. So I launched Ibiza Unlocked in 2017. And it is real estate, you know, with everything that goes with it. Sales, rentals, and the concierge services. I focus more on the holiday rental side for the rentals, not long term. So the people come here and I create a full turnkey solution for their holiday, organise their itinerary, the VIP tables, the boat charters and everything like that. which a lot of people are doing on the island. It's a very saturated market, but you know, obviously I've got a little, I've got my client base and they're quite loyal. And then I, in 2019, I separated my company into two, and I've got Ibiza Unlocked Real Estate and Ibiza Unlocked Yacht Services. So the yacht service arm of my business deals with some of the bigger yachts that come in. I organise the berth for them, provisional, you know, provisioning, which means like fine wines, fine meats and stuff, technical support and concierge services, everything they need on the ground.
Fabulous! I never knew that. That's amazing.
Yeah. So that business, those two businesses are going very, very well, and I'm busy spinning plates all the time. And I was blessed in 2017 by going back to the friendship with Norman. Sorry to keep going back to that. Was he just got the gig to do music for, curate the music for a film called Ibiza, the silent movie, which was directed by Julian Temple. The film itself was the brainchild of a good friend of mine, Malcolm Geary, who's the CEO of BAFTA, the film section of BAFTA, a very influential guy in TV. And he had the idea. Julian Temple done the directing and Norman done the music. Now, Norman said to the director, Julian, my good friend Howard's on the island, trust him, he will be able to help you with absolutely everything. So I come on as one of the producers, helping on the ground. And in the end, you know, I helped broker some of the archive footage, which you see some of the archive footage in there from our era in the 90s, which was shot by our good friend Phil Silcock. And then loads of different aspects of it. I'm in the film a few times. Some of my Elvis stock footage is in the film. And it was a beautiful project to be involved in. There's something, because I'm so passionate about the island. So I was very passionate about this project. So within the all-encompassing Ibiza Unlocked, it's a bit of production, real estate and yacht services. It's a little bit of everything, really.
Yeah.
Knowledge of the island, local
knowledge.
Well,
this is what I was going to say. You know, when you've been here such a long time and you have got that extensive knowledge of contact, where everything is, you know, what is possible. And I always say everything is possible in Ibiza if you know who the right person is to facilitate making it happen. And obviously you had all those fingers in all those pies and know all those people to make it happen.
So it was an honour to be part of that.
Okay.
And the thing is, from that film, going back to, you know, our connections and sliding door moments happen. Number one, your connections are only good for the amount of time that you remain with and conduct yourself with integrity.
Yeah, of
course. Okay, so my reputation, I guard it with my life because I've never screwed anyone over on the island or anywhere or off the island. So I have integrity, so that because of that, people know that they like you and they can trust you and they deal with you. So off the back of the film, this guy called Mark Commode, who's a film critic, he's on the radio, he's on the BBC, he's well known in the UK in the industry. And he critiqued the film and he was blown away by the story and fell in love with the idea of Ibiza. So he reached out to the director, Julian Temple, who in turn reached out to me and said, look, my friend's coming over. He's one of us. Can you look after him when he comes over? So he came over with his family, took him to Pike's, which happened to be Norman's birthday, and that Norman made a fuss of him as well, and we become friends. And then he in turn introduced me to a guy called David Holmes, very well known producer. He knocks around with big Hollywood players, but he's a proper Belfast, you know, don't suffer any fools, and he's straight to the point, and I love him.
My kind of guy.
Yeah, no, he's a great guy. And anyway, so he phoned me up, said, look, I'm coming to Ibiza, I want a couple of gigs, can you get me a couple of gigs? So we've done something at Pike's, and then we've done something at La Torre. And then guess who he turns up with? Michael Fassbender, Hollywood actor, big cigar, says he's heard about my story of Elvis, loved dinner with him, put my business card in his hand. And, you know, what I'm saying is you never know how these introductions and connections lead to.
Yeah.
You know, from Elvis to putting a business card in
the
Hollywood actors.
Let's start at the beginning, from being the waffle guy.
Oh, yeah, let's go right back.
From being the waffle guy, or even standing in Gatwick with your hold all, looking up, you know, and meeting those two guys. Yeah. What an amazing story. So you've come full circle, really, from running away from Brighton for what reasons we don't know exactly, but it wasn't illegal.
Yeah, yeah.
To here we are now, successful businessman, hobnobbing with, you know, Hollywood stars.
Yeah.
I mean, where else can you go? You know, what are the plans for the future? Is there any projects or anything in motion, or just cracking on with the season ahead, I suppose. It's going to be a busy one this year.
I think it's going to be a busy summer. The winter's gone extremely fast, which is scary. But every year I tend to do like a 1-minute promo video to showcase my services. So I've got an idea about what I'm going to do next with that. So I want to get that done in the coming weeks. So I'm really trying to bang the drum on both aspects of my business, both arms of my business. And recently I just had a call from, there's a documentary, and I shouldn't say this, but I haven't seen it. It's called Below Deck. It's about the yachting industry.
I have seen it. Okay. I love it.
So my friend Maxi, and a big shout out to Maxi. He was one of the stars on the second series, and he passed my number to the executive producer. They're shooting here this summer, and they reached out to me to help them with some of the production and concierge stuff. So we're in talks at the moment. So if I can get that wrapped up, that would be amazing for the yacht side of my business and overall promotion.
I would say watch it, the Mediterranean series, because you providing all of those things, because I find it really fascinating. There's a lot of my friends are Below Deck fans as well. When they come in, these massive, great big super yachts, and, you know, the provisioning and all the services that need to go on, and it would give you an understanding into what it is that they actually need. It's a really interesting show. You'll get hooked. I was.
Yeah, I've got to do my homework on it, because obviously if I'm going to be working with them, I need to know my stuff around it. And I'm hoping that I get the gig, because I've come on good recommendation from Maxi, as I say. But going to the show, which no doubt they show like loads of stuff, some stressful moments. I'll tell you a little story about a stressful moment that I did with a yacht client. So a big yacht come in. The captain says to me, come and meet the owner. He wants to meet you at the dock. And tonight we're taking his friends, business associates, to Pasha. Want the best table in the house. Yada, yada, yada. All these things. It's the middle of August. David Gower, you can't get in Pasha. No. All the tables are sold out months in advance. So I've got my work cut out. Anyway, so basically what happens is I meet the owner, shake his hand, turn on my heels, walk off thinking, right, I've got to go straight to the VIP office and grease the door, mm-hmm. so to speak, and try and make sure this works, because I don't want to lose this client. I get to the end of the marina and I get a phone call. It's the captain basically screaming. One of the guest children was having an epileptic fit. They don't suffer from epilepsy. Anyway, they need an ambulance straight away. So within 1 minute, obviously I'm straight back to the boat with an ambulance. We take the kid off the boat on a stretcher, straight in the back of the ambulance with the owner of the yacht's wife, straight to A&E, where they tend to him with all the tubes and all this kind of stuff. So it's a stressful moment, you know, like the woman's crying. I'm trying to, you know, comfort her. And then I get a phone call from the captain. Right, you've got to come back to the boat because the rest of the guests want to go to Pasha. Have you sorted the table out yet? Right. So I went straight from the A&E to Pasha VIP. With the clients, and it was just you know, the emotions and the roller coaster ride that with that, and you've got to react like this,
yeah.
in Ibiza, and you've got to be able to turn it on. And thank God they had a great night, and thank God the kid was out of hospital the next day.
This was one of my questions, yeah. So he was okay.
The kid was out of the hospital the next day, so it all ended well for everyone.
And needless to say, that is a client locked in.
Locked
so unlocked, that is locked in,
yeah,
now
locked
for
in,
future.
Yeah, exactly. We've become friends as well, you know. So it's all about reacting fast. It's always about integrity. And my advice for anyone who's living here or thinking of living here is always do the right thing by your clients. Be fast in responding. Collaborate with everyone that you can on the island. And at first, it's like a bit of a, pardon the language, shit filtering system, where you filter out the rubbish people and you get rid of them, and then you hold on to the core people that you can collaborate with, and you can hand over your client to them without worrying about them stealing your client going forward. So it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. But eventually, you know, if you do the right thing, and the island will look after you.
I always say that to anyone, and I've had many friends from back in the day that are now living here, and many a conversation we've had of what we're going to do, what we're going to, you know, how we're going to survive in Ibiza. And any advice for anyone would be, like you say, have integrity, be responsible, be reliable. You know, our slogan for our business is reliability is not expensive, it's priceless. Because how many people, like you say, do you meet in Ibiza that give you the yada yada, we can provide this, that and the other? When it comes down to it, they don't do any of it.
Yeah,
like you said, the shit filter. I like that. I'm gonna use that in the future, because, you know, moving to an island where there is a massive expat community, if you, going back to reputation, if you say you can do something and you don't do it, you don't provide what you're, you know, barking up the tree about, then you're soon going to get found out. And once your reputation's gone on a small island like this, it's gone.
It's gone. I always say your reputation can be decimated at a dinner party.
Yeah.
One person mentions you, oh, don't deal with them. That's 10 people. Then all of a sudden, before you know it, your name's mud. And, so that's why I always say guard your reputation like it's like...
Well, just be true. Be true to yourself. Yeah.
Be true, yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, I literally want to talk to you forever and ever, but I know you've got to get on, I've got to get on, and I'm sure the listeners have got to get on. So you've already said your piece of advice, which is always my last question. So, Howard, is this it? Is Ibiza it for you now? Do you see you living your days out here? Not that you're about to die, because you've got a lot of life in you yet. He's been boxing this morning before I came here, so he keeps himself fit. I'll put on the socials a little picture of you and me, if you don't mind.
Yes, please do.
So everyone can put a face to your voice, and the stories that we could harp on about from Elvis and all your days. I love listening to you, and I'm sure everybody else has. So
thank you so much.
Thank you for
show.
Taking the time for meeting with me today and telling us your wonderful stories. And definitely, I'll have you on again so we can go in a little bit more deep into some of the days of old.
Yeah, the nitty gritty.
The nitty gritty. That's what we all want to hear. So thank you for tuning in, for listening in again, and we'll see you next week. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye. Thanks very much, guys.